We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyrus USA.
Live from WRCT Studios in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Hour, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The cyber station, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is cyberstationusa.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
All right, it's Total Education Hour time. It's very interesting when I decide where my direction, 10 years in radio, and my brand always changes. And my guest tonight's going to get me back into the education sphere. I've been having a lot of conversations regarding security about different things in education. So I'm excited to welcome the program, Dr. Sunny Magana. Dr. Sunny, how are you? And I'm excited to have you on the program.
Hey, I'm doing great. I'm really excited to be here as well. Thank you very much for the gracious invitation.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you think about specifically enough education, what do you think? We hear too much negativity, but we also are just so concerned about what's happening today that we don't want to break down what's the best methods. We're afraid to ruffle feathers. And in the last 10 years, I've seen that all the time. We want to have fights instead of have a conversation.
I think that's a really powerful insight. I think we need to raise the level of three things. We need to raise the level of the discussion so that it is a dialogue and that we can engage in a discussion that is based upon the second thing, which is best practices, not just what works or what works well, but what works best, because that is then focused on the third thing, which is what the best quality evidence tells us that what it looks like. So we need to start, I guess, like Let's start with the evidence. Let's start with the highest quality educational research evidence that exists that tells us what are the things that work best, and then have a conversation with every educational stakeholder around how do we go about doing that? How do we go about measuring what works best in education?
See, when you talk about that, and you're raising a lot of great points regarding this. Why is it we cannot take, like, for example, and I've kind of expanded in many ways as a business owner and a different person, as a talk show host, expanding my horizons. I constantly want to learn. Why are we afraid in education to look what works best? Why do we want to stick to the same old? And why don't we want to look at research and allow people like yourself that really break this down and investigate this for what's the best practices in education?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question, Neil. And it's complicated, but I think there are some contributing forces. One of them is that we don't like change. You know, human nature is such that we just don't like being disrupted or have our patterns or processes disrupted. And that's as true in education as in government or finance. We like to do what we like to do. We like to do what we know works. And when we're confounded or confronted with some information that is provocative and kind of makes us shake our beliefs and challenges our assumptions, we tend to shy away from that. So here's a kind of, you know, common truth. In education, we tend to cling to comforting lies rather than face the uncomfortable truth.
Yeah, you're right. And because I think that if we can just go about our business and just do things the way we're used to doing them and not getting out of our comfort zone, everything's fine. And as I talked about before, yeah. We are in a battle in education because of how people want to define education in a certain way. We want unions want to keep teaching the same way. Then you have other people that want to reform things, but they're battling each other and just banging heads instead of really getting along. You saw Dr. Sunny, what was happening specifically enough with the newest candidates for president of the United States in the Democratic Party. They're already knocking them on the news channels as, oh, by the way, they are really pro-charter school. They're pro-this. They're pro-that. Instead of really looking and examining things, and that's very challenging. And like I said, if people didn't agree with you, they're going to come and attack you instead of really figuring out the research. And that's where we have to change education, right, in my opinion. But I want to spend a lot of time talking about specifically how your research in your newest book, but also having dialogue and questions about it. But do you agree with me? I think that that's the thing. I'm telling you right now, if we wanted to gather teachers that are motivated today, and I said, hey, come on my show and come on as your real self, how many school districts would even allow it, Dr. Sunny? Not many.
Yeah, I think teachers would love to do it, though, because there are so many great stories out there that'll dispel some of the myths. I said comforting lies. I think I should soften that to comforting myths. You know, we tend to like comforting myths rather than uncomfortable truth. But I think you nailed it. Stepping out of our comfort zone is where authentic learning takes place, and that needs to be nurtured. There needs to be an environment where that's psychologically safe so that individuals can take cognitive and intellectual risks while being psychologically safe. And that's a tricky one. You know, I mean, how do we create learning environments for all learners, not just students, but teachers, principals, administrators, state superintendents? How can we create environments that are psychologically and emotionally safe and allow individuals to step far out of their comfort zone, because that's where real learning takes place?
Absolutely. So let's talk about, you've written many books, but specifically enough, Disruptive Classroom Technologies. Why did you write this book?
Yeah, that's a great question. I started researching the impacts of technology in education in 1984 when I was a graduate student at Rutgers University in New Jersey. And I noticed a pattern very early on that, you know, technology was being used to sort of as a babysitter for kids.
Right.
And the technology had an increase in engagement immediately. But almost as quickly, that student engagement dropped off really quickly. And that confounded me because I thought, well, this is supposed to be, you know, so transformational. 35 years later, I've seen that same pattern repeat itself over and over and over again, where technologies are acquired, students get wired, and then they get tired. And that peak in engagement is artificial, and it's based on the novelty of the experience itself. It's called the novelty effect. So whether it's laptops or Palm Pilots or interactive display panels or mobile devices, there's a pretty quick artificial bump in student engagement, which is almost always followed by a decline in student engagement because the novelty wears off and they get bored. And that confounded me.
Right.
I've been researching this problem, the wicked problem of the low impact of technology in education for 4 decades. And what compelled me to write this book was I've synthesized all my research into a method that has been shown to quadruple student achievement. And I have to tell the world about it. So that's really what compels me. If you got a good solution, as educators, we want to share it. So I'm sharing this with anybody who will listen, that this is how we can see significant gains in student achievement. And it's heavily research-based. It's grounded in our existing knowledge of the science of teaching and learning. And then you add technologies to support those processes and you get huge gains.
Yeah. And
it's not always that way.
Right. Exactly. And so why are people afraid and fearful of technology? And different studies come out, and why are we fearful of it when that's exactly what we need to do? Because thinking about this, all my life is technology now. All the businesses I'm involved in, if I get become more technically knowledgeable, the more money I can make and the more opportunity and the better, more efficient I can become. Why are we afraid to do that in education? And then the teachers cannot do what they tell the kids to do in the classroom.
Well, again, a great question, and this is not a simple problem. This is a really complex problem. It's really defined as a wicked problem, and that's from the literature. A wicked problem is a problem that's multifaceted. It's really complex. It's intractable. It's ill-defined, ill-structured, and it has no existing problem or no existing solution yet. And the technology influx into education has led to really a negative effect on student learning. So let me just talk about the research, some numbers, just a little bit, and I'll make the point that I want to make. John Hattie is a legendary education researcher, and he does what's called meta-analysis. He does an analysis of many, many studies. So he synthesized over 10,000 studies looking at various aspects of computer technology and education. And the reality is that the average effect of technology is actually less than the average impact of the average teacher in an average school. It actually has a deleterious effect on student learning. And that's confounding to people who have a bias. And that may be why people are hesitant to think about using technology, or they think that the technologies will add changes that by the very nature of having the technology by bias. So let me explain that. There's two different types of biases people have. One is a value positive bias. And those are the folks that think, oh, you know, if you just add technology, all of our problems will go away. Students will automatically be transformed and learning will automatically be accelerated just by simply adding technology. You know, that's not correct. That's a bias that skews perspective. Then there's the other bias, which is a value negative bias. And those are people who think that, you know, if you just add technology into education, it will automatically reduce value and reduce instructional quality and reduce student achievement. I suggest we take a value-neutral approach. We all need to recalibrate our thinking and recognize that digital education tools have no inherent value in and of themselves, which kind of sounds like heresy.
Yeah.
They have no inherent value. The value is made possible by how the technology is used and by whom.
Yeah, it's crazy when you think about it, and you think about no inherent value. So when we get back, we're going to continue the conversation with Dr. Sunny and really go into disruptive classroom technologies and understand how we can use technology to advance in the classroom. We're learning a little bit about where he's coming from, his research, and what classroom teachers can do, but also parents can do, and everyone can look at in technology. Yeah. You're listening to Total Education Hour on 88.3 WRCT in Pittsburgh, and we're streaming live at WRCT.org. Hashtag WRCT. When we get back, more Dr. Sunny. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Hour on 88.3 WRCT in Pittsburgh, and we're streaming live at WRCT.org. Hashtag WRCT. And I'm with Dr. Sunny Magna and we're having a really good conversation regarding disruptive classroom technologies, but really kind of education, starting at why we are afraid to debate education. Why are we not willing to get out of our comfort zone? So once you figured out that we are valuing kids the wrong way when teaching technology, what were your next steps?
Well, the next step was I had to figure out
we have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. We shake up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyber Station USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple. Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA, always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
What would be a desirable outcome? What are we shooting for here? And that's where the essential human capacity of imagination comes directly into play. I had to be really thoughtful and do these thought experiments where I would imagine what classrooms would look like when students are using digital tools to accelerate their understanding of content, to accelerate how they represent that understanding, and to accelerate how they share and teach one another. And I imagined a classroom where students had a doubling of academic achievement. And over the past 35 years, I've been working on making that imagined classroom a reality. And it takes a lot of trial and error. It's hard work. You have to kind of put your ideas through the refutation of science in order to really hazard your prize. And so I've been doing peer-reviewed research in my classrooms as a teacher, as a building principal, as a technology director. Now I'm an author and a researcher. And I've distilled those 35 years of research into methods that are highly reliable. And it's not just because I say so, but it's what the peer-reviewed research evidence strongly suggests. So your point about having a conversation in education is really well taken, Neil, because in many parts of human endeavors, evidence is relied upon. We rely upon evidence in architecture, in engineering, in science, in mathematics, and finance. We look at the numbers and we play the odds by playing the most reliable methods forward. Education needs to embrace an evidence basis for everything that we do. But when it comes to educational technology, my fear is that we've been focused too much on opinion and
yes.
propaganda,
yes.
not evidence.
And when you see opinion and propaganda, propaganda is we're creating research without really having measurable results or a true sample and research. And while, again, the opinion means, hey, I think it works in the classroom. Yeah. I did it myself without even really testing lots of kids to see it, right?
Exactly. But we've been really awash in so much noise in the educational technology market from vendors who have a conflict of interest. They want to sell stuff in education. So they're propagandists that tell individual stories. It's like they have personal opinions or even collective opinions with very low sample size, no scientific investigation, no systematic observation, no controls. They just tell case stories and sell their technologies based on very flimsy evidence. you know, a recent estimate was that the United States is closing in on an $80 billion spent on classroom technologies. And we really don't have much to show for it yet. That's a staggering.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and when I think about that, I'd say to myself, well, the problem is we're creating technology in a lot of ways that, hey, let's have them play games, right, to learn. Without any evidence base that the kids are really focusing on what they're learning. So I understand where you're at. The first step when you research, and that's the other thing, is getting educators and even professors and even administrators to understand that they're scientists. You got to be a scientist. Yeah. You got to test, revise, test, figure it out. And then finally, when you see that there is, the valuable research that shows it's research based, then you implement it. And that's just not happening. Are you? Yeah, go ahead.
No, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. That's you have to recognize what the science says, what the evidence base is. But, and in addition to being a scientist in the classroom, teachers are also artists. So I really encourage people to embrace the art and science of teaching and learning. And that means learning what the research evidence says, the scientific principles, and then artfully implementing them in the classroom.
Yeah. Well,
it's a wonderful thing.
But it's difficult to figure it out. So how do you kind of come up with areas so that to find the right technology in the classroom? Do you think that we're still not even at this point in time when kids are on iPads or kids are using laptops and books and we're more and more away from books and we're using, you know, PowerPoint and we're using a whiteboard that's or a smart board. Yeah. That's still not enough technology, is it, to really help these kids learn specifically, right?
Yeah, it depends on how it's used and by whom. So let me tell you, you know, I'll give you a metaphor. What I think we've been doing is we're trying to put a digital spin on an industrial age education system.
Yes.
And we've been going along this path doing just a planar shift, and we're really essentially putting a 21st century frosting on a 20th century donut. Yeah. It's the same donut. But we're just putting technology sheen on it. And fundamentally, the practices that happen in classrooms are this. It's a tell and practice model of instruction, where teachers tell students what knowledge is important to memorize, and then the students go and memorize it and then respond or retrieve that memory on some assessment. That was a model that may have worked, probably didn't work very well at the turn of the 20th century. That model is woefully insufficient at preparing kids to address really complex learning challenges once they leave school. So we need to shift our goalposts away from summative assessment as the only means of determining success and instead focus on whole child and whole system mastery and well-being. That's a shift in consciousness. And it sounds kind of highfalutin, but I have some really precise, practical, logical ways to get there.
And that's the challenge and difficulty. So basically, the one thing, if you're going to use technology in the classroom, teachers need to be trained. Administrators need to be trained. School districts need to be trained. And the lack of training is the first thing. So if we would say that Common Core has failed in specific aspects, it might not be Common Core, the standards. It's how the teachers have been trained in Common Core. Correct, Dr. Sunny. It's not. Go ahead.
You're right. Yeah, the Common Core isn't necessarily a bad thing. Frankly, I think there are too many standards. And if we don't change our instructional model, the processes, then the Common Core becomes kind of an enemy of the people. And it shouldn't be. It should be a pathway forward.
But the teachers don't know how to teach it. So the same thing when it comes to technology. We are still, as you said, in a factory type system. Think about how it's hard to even get people to use specific tools before this technology developed. Oh, use film strip or show films, but they never were able to implement it into strategies and standards for kids to learn as well as direct instruction.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I want to be really clear. I'm in no way putting any blame on teachers.
No,
teachers,
it's not.
Heroes,
it's the lack. It's
the heroic work every
day.
I
agree.
And I know. Yeah, and I know. You agree with me. It's heroic work. Our educational system and the beliefs upon which our educational system have been founded are actually flawed. So let me go back in history. Over 130 years ago, in the late 19th century, a group of college presidents, including the presidents of Harvard and University of Michigan and Vassar, they formed a group called the Committee of Ten. And the Committee of Ten decided, you know, this whole education thing in the United States is getting out of hand. We need to have a common curriculum. So the Common Core isn't a new idea. It was really kind of an offshoot of this Committee of Ten that met in 1890s. But they had a flawed notion of human learning, and they called it mental discipline. They believed that the mind, the brain, was like a muscle. And in order to really effectively use the brain, you have to have it, give it repetitive cycles of drill and practice, drill and practice, drill and practice. And that's how the brain develops. That notion of mental discipline was debunked in the early 20th century as not based in any evidence, but was just an opinion. And so the systems that we have today really have that residue of this mental discipline myth that, and then so we give kids drill and practice and drill and practice. And now we add technology and we just give them digital worksheets. That's digital worksheets.
No.
That's a 21st century residue of the 20th century donut. We need to fundamentally shift what we mean about teaching and learning so that we move away from just simple memorization and move towards, even though that's a part, that's a start. We need to then move into deeper learning where students are following their own interests around that knowledge that they're interacting with, connected to things that are meaningful to them in their lives, and then transfer their knowledge. Those are three critical stages: surface learning, deeper learning, and knowledge transfer. When we move into that system, student learning and passion and contribution flourishes.
Yeah, definitely. It's something.
It really does.
And you have to do it. So I guess what we're hearing is that technology needs to go to the 21st century. So when I think of technology going to the 21st century, it needs to enhance what a teacher does. I'm sure, Dr. Sunny, you're cool with direct instruction. You want to walk into a classroom and observe and see direct instruction. But you also want to see some small group. You also want to see some specific student-led instruction. You don't want the teacher to be the facilitator the entire time. You want to mix. And our problem is we have specific educators, principals that say, hey, I only like doing it this way. So you walk into a classroom and hear a loud classroom, as we saw in a news article that came out, I guess this week, that they said really kids don't learn as well in noise, just because we thought, hey, you know, cooperative learning's the way we need to go. And they just teach the in classes entirely cooperative learning. So when you're talking technology, sometimes too much technology is not a good thing, right? You're wanting a mix of education instruction, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I can describe this framework that I developed, which actually does that very thing. It shows that there needs to be a sequence.
Yes.
A sequence, a precise sequence of teaching and learning strategies, and a precise sequence of technology's use to enhance those strategies. That's what leads to this extraordinary gain in student achievement. But you need a framework. You need a conceptual framework so that you know, well, what should I be doing? Which stage am I in? What should I be doing? What practices and what things should I be doing in order to get through the stage to get to the next stage, right? That's
exactly
what a conceptual framework is. So let me tell you, this is how I came up with the T3 framework for innovation, which is the framework that I have in my book, Disruptive Classroom Technologies. This is exactly how I came up with that framework. It was 1976. I was living in my hometown of Stratford, New Jersey, and I taught myself how to play guitar when I was 14 years old. And I didn't really see guitar playing as learning because it was so much fun. I had a lot of passion for it. I was really enjoying listening to great songs on the radio and then translating them onto my guitar. So I was playing the Eagles and Beatles and John Denver. Remember Country Roads?
Yes. Yes, for sure.
But I would play those songs and I would just hear them on the radio, buy a little chord book and translate what I heard.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. We shake up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
From the radio onto my six-string guitar, and I'd be playing around the campfires in South Jersey, camping out the Pine Barrens and playing these songs, and then I heard Eddie Van Halen.
Oh, wow.
And it totally disrupted my world. Eddie Van Halen totally rocked my world. And when I heard Eruption from Van Halen 1, I realized I want to learn what Eddie does. I can't go back to Country Roads anymore. I can't keep playing the same songs. I want.
Yeah,
to
make those changes for sure.
I want to make those changes. So I happened to be listening to WMMR radio in Philadelphia, and I think John DiBello was the DJ in the Delaware Valley radio station, and he had Eddie Van Halen on the radio program, and he asked Eddie, do you have any advice for budding guitar gods in the Delaware Valley? And Eddie Van Halen, I swear to God, said, yes, I do. Kids, okay. This is your Uncle Eddie speaking. If you're the kind of kid that's sitting around a campfire playing the guitar and listening to songs on the radio, playing the guitar, keep doing that. That's healthy. That's really a great place to start. But if you want to get better, you got to go through another phase. And I call that the Chuck Berry phase. Because every great guitarist, I don't care who you are, every great guitarist has gone through and mastered the Chuck Berry phase of playing music, which is rock and roll. All the riffs, the blues riffs, different transpositions. You got to learn all the positions up and down the neck. You got to be able to play fluidly.
Yes.
You got to transform into a rock and roller before you can get to the stage where you're really innovating and doing your own sound and playing in your own way. And that struck me as genius. You know, I'm 14 years old. I'm listening to Eddie Van Halen.
Exactly.
Giving me a framework. He gave me a conceptual framework to help me think through the stage of guitar playing that I was in, whether I was translating, transforming, or transcending. And that's precisely the words I use in my technology framework, my framework for innovation. There's translational technology use, transformational technology use, and transcendent technology use.
Wow.
What I see all over the country, frankly, all over the world, is translational technology use. You know, they're
translating it to understand it to the real world, to what they're doing, instead of really transforming themselves into something better. And when we get back, I want to kind of delve in and see if I'm on the right track on this. We're talking to Dr. Sunny Magana here on the Neil Haley Show. Total Education Hour, Disruptive Classroom Technologies. When we get back, we'll talk more. You're listening to Total Education Hour on 88.3 WRCT in Pittsburgh. And we're streaming live at WRCT.org, #WRCT. When we get back, more with Dr. Sunny. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Hour and having a great conversation with Dr. Sunny Magana, author of Disruptive Classroom Technologies. And you came up with this idea based on another principle in life. I believe all education, life is education. Education is life. Anything we talk about, if we explain things and teach somebody something, regardless of what we're doing, it's education. And that's what I try to do on the radio for the last 10 years, is educate people in so many different aspects of life, from celebrity talk to anything, and really learn from that person that I interview. And that's what we're learning today as we've been breaking down our conversation. Now, when you talked about everyone wants to do translational technology, they look at the technology, they see what it looks like, and then they try to translate it to what they think. They're not developing themselves, right? Am I on the correct track?
Right. Yeah. You're absolutely on the right track. What most folks are doing is translating from an analog experience using pencil and paper or an overhead projector or a chalkboard or mimeo sheets. They're translating those experiences, those administrative tasks, into a digital form. So then now the teachers send emails, or they put their notes on some presentation software, or we use digital tools to automate the testing of students. So there's two elements in translational technologies: automation and consumption. And that's just we're translating from pencil and paper or book to a digital tool. When we just use technology to translate from analog to digital, we can expect a very low effect on student achievement.
No. Or even lower, because it's not
technology used.
And pretty much not seeing any growth, or even less growth. Like, okay, we're just gonna make sure everything's online for homework. Okay, that's great, but then you have a computer screen that's going to disrupt the kids when they're at home, when they need not to have so much screen time. So how do we and make it transformative? You have a framework to tell us how to do that.
Well,
I
do, and we got to start with that reality that translational technologies isn't bad, but keep doing that. But if you want to get better, you got to go through another stage. And that's what I call transformational technologies. And translational technologies is kind of like teachers or educators playing the same song over and over and over again.
Right.
After a while, you're not going to get any better. You need to learn a new way of teaching and facilitating learning. And that is what's transformational. So in the transformational domain, there are two elements: production and contribution.
Okay.
So let me define that. The first I call production, because I want a world where students are more involved in planning for their learning, expressing and representing their learning in a way that's authentic to them, individual, creative, they do critical thinking, they communicate, they collaborate, and they share what they know, what they can do, and how they came to know and do what they know and do, and then use that to self-regulate their understanding of their effort, their progress, and how they feel during each phase of learning. And when that happens, when kids take more control of their planning for learning and the representing of their knowledge, and then producing representations of that knowledge, they get more naturally involved in monitoring and tracking the kinds of things that lead to mastery. And that's effort, progress, and their social and emotional state of well-being.
Let me be a devil's advocate right now, and I'm going to jump you right here, and let me be the devil's advocate and say, okay, why can't I do that in direct instruction model? Why can't I, you know, teach a perfect lesson, go ahead and engage everyone in the classroom, really master that lesson in math or social studies, wherever, where I start with the anticipatory set, go through, you know, Madeline Hunter's way of teaching, boom, 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 all the way through, and then check for understanding, and I'm good. Boom, golden. It's exactly what you're talking about, and that the kids learn, and we assess everything. What is the difference? What you're talking about, you're just using technology. What is that? What makes it even better, you think, using technology than what I just talked about, the old-fashioned Madeline Hunter way?
Yeah. Well, because the old-fashioned way just privileges surface learning. That's the kind of learning where students just memorize basic facts, basic details, the things that they can recall, simple information. The surface learning just gets held onto our short-term memory for a short period of time. Maybe it gets into working memory. But if we don't deepen that understanding, we'll lose it. And that's the challenge of staying at the direct instruction surface level. There's a place for direct instruction, for sure. But it's in that first phase of learning, the surface level phase. We need to have students go deeper and create representations of understanding, to create metaphors, to create elaborations, to tell stories, to connect that knowledge in some way that's meaningful to them in contexts that were not the same context in which they learned it. So if they deepen their understanding, that helps to actually consolidate that surface learning. So the surface learning becomes deeply consolidated while they're acquiring that deep knowledge. And when they create representations and knowledge models, they are able to demonstrate conceptual understanding, communicate the conceptual understanding, and model it. And those are the strategies in the production element of the transformation technology. And it goes deeper.
Right.
The next element is called contribution.
But can you give me some concrete? Before I get to that, I wanted some concrete examples, because when I'm understanding this, and like, for example, when I tutor the SAT, I really want kids to start thinking out of the box. Not we're just going to teach you a certain strategies. We're going to break down a lot of school strategies that are not taught, where you're gonna really analytically think. You're gonna own the passage. Let's say in reading, you're going to be able to analyze it, ask yourself questions, go through, evaluate things that sometimes we're not getting in the classroom anymore. We're just teaching to a test, a specific rote memorization way. And I have to take a lot of kids through the SAT and take it in that way. So I'm saying I can do it without technology, but I do use some technology.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to understand is the concrete examples of where you're driving us. You're exactly driving the right engine of what we want to do in education, but you're using the word technology.
Yeah.
I haven't heard yet what technology are you using? So give me some concrete examples. I'm sorry, I've covered this for over 10 years on my radio show. We've broken down everything in the world. I'm not going to just interview like another book, because I mean, I think you really have the right idea, and you have the right idea to how to reform education. But when you use the word technology, I'm waiting to hear, well, what's the technology you're telling us, Dr. Sonny? Go ahead. And then you can go back through to the next level. Yeah.
I will. Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, there's so many great suites of productivity tools. Google Suite is a great suite of tools. Microsoft has the Office 365. These are open-ended tools that students can produce collaborative documents that include words, pictures, sounds, videos, and hyperlinks. That it changes everything. So now a student can produce a hyper doc, a Google Doc, that has all sorts of different multimedia representations of what a child thinks about finding the slope of a line, and can connect the concept of finding the slope of a line to something that interests them, like skateboarding or skiing or snowboarding.
And you're using Bloom's taxonomies with technology. And you're using Bloom's taxonomies did you know my background? I'm no longer teaching, but I did teach for X amount of years. Yeah. I don't know if you did that research on me or what.
I do know that. I did. Okay. I did indeed. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you see, I've been interviewing other people after that. But I mean, when I'm listening to you, I agree with you wholeheartedly. When you bring up these tools, there are lots of people that just don't have technology. For example, I guess it keeps my living going that I'm able to go and explain how to even do a social media post to teach people the specifically how you address things. Even young kids, they think they know technology, but they ultimately cannot create a product. So you're saying through this technology, through the things that they're going to use in work in their lives when they have to apply for jobs, because everything's technology now. You don't call on the phone. You use Zoom. You have a Zoom conference call. You have to learn how to attach documents. You have to learn how to create PowerPoints or create presentations or do video presentations. That is all. You want to use that in the learning phase to reach the objectives so far, if I'm on the right track.
Exactly. And that's exactly right. It's the learning intentions. Everything has to start with a learning intention. What do you want the child to be able to know and do, and what does success look like? So in my strategies, I have students produce mastery goals, where they produce their own learning goal that's reflective of the learning intention by the teacher. And then the student keeps track. They monitor his or her own progress using a Google Sheet. I've created a Google tool on Google Sheets where students
have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shake-up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple. Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
Can track and visualize their effort, their progress, and how they feel at every stage of the learning, the surface learning, deeper learning, and knowledge transfer. And when kids do that, they engage in the process of self-regulation.
Yes.
They're more self-reflective, and they use the technology with more intentionality to produce a representation that shows this is my representation of this learning intention. Here's how I know it. Here's how I know it, and here's how I got there. And using all those technologies that I mentioned, including video and audio and these category of tools that are called screencasting tools. Like Google has a wonderful extension in Chrome called Screencastify. It's totally free.
Yeah.
And kids can create their own Ken Burns-style videos, movies.
That's great.
Images or text or anything, and then narrate over it.
That's fantastic. See, I would love to know that stuff just because
it's remarkable.
because I bring certain people on my team to take care of things. If I could figure out how to do them, that's great. But see, that's where I was like to my daughter that has technology. She's 13 and my district does a great job in that. I'm like, hey, can you? Yeah, I can do this. I can do that. But the problem is we're not doing it in the classroom. We're doing it in a technology classroom. We're doing it in a computer classroom instead of integrating, because honestly, the biggest problem, we're going to take another break, but a real quick break. But when we get back, I'm going to address this next point. But I'm absolutely getting you now. It took a little time to understand and my questioning. Now, you've probably not been questioned by an educator like this that's not as high up as you are, Dr. Sunny, but I at least get the opportunity on my radio show. So when we get back, we're going to, again, go ahead and talk with Dr. Sunny Magana here on the on the Total Education Hours, Disruptive Classroom Technologies, and the discussion, and really looking at, hey, we're not just checking a box, and we'll talk more about that. You're listening to Total Education Hour on 88.3 WRCT in Pittsburgh, and we're streaming live at WRCT.org, hashtag WRCT. When we get back, this is just a phenomenal conversation. He is really interesting, and this is something I recommend any teacher to check out. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Hour on 88.3 WRCT in Pittsburgh, and we're streaming live at WRCT.org, hashtag WRCT, and I'm with Dr. Sunny Magana. Now, Dr. Sunny, one thing I'll say is my transformation is 10 years before I became a teacher, there's no way I could go speak in front of 3,000 people in front. If I didn't do radio for 10 years, there's no way I could do a presentation. Through learning how to do it and doing it thousands and thousands of times, using technology, understanding things, practice makes perfect, I can now talk in front of lots of people. I think you understand that for sure. But that's the thing. These kids need to experience all this so they're not learning it in college. And that's the point where I love what you're talking about, because if the teachers don't understand the technology, the kids don't understand the technology. And when they get to college and college tries to check it off the box, and then they get that teacher that's innovative that says, hey, I know what the job market's like. I know what they're expecting to make you a possible software salesperson or whatever technology you're going to get involved in. You're going to have to use technology 24/7 every second of the day and be able to create your own projects, or you're not going to get hired. We need to teach it early. And I see where that point. Right. So, am I right about this? And not just checking off a box saying, yeah, we just created a PowerPoint. Yeah, we just did this. But really, you just had your parents do it. The kids didn't create it themselves.
Yeah, no, that's it. It has to be authentic and it has to be intentional. So student use of technology that leads to really significant gains is the kind of technology where students are more involved in how they share their learning authentically and keep their learning journeys represented authentically. And in the second part of the transformational domain is what I call contribution. And that's where students, in addition to creating mastery goals, producing mastery goals, keep tracking and monitoring their effort and their progress, and producing knowledge representations. Now those knowledge representations are tutorials, giving kids the opportunity to teach other kids what they know allows children to learn from mastery. Now, it is so clear in the existing research.
It goes I used it all in my classroom all the time. When I taught, I would just turn the tables around and say, hey, you outline the chapter in social studies. Yeah. I'll see you in the morning and you're teaching the lesson to us and I'll just be out there facilitating. And it works. But I didn't have the technology that's involved now. It works so much, but it's not so much work. It teaches kids to be teachers. And the only way you're going to learn things is through teaching them. For sure.
Yep. That's right. That's exactly right. So that shifts the control from the teacher as the deliverer of information to students as knowledge architects that are purposely producing contributive knowledge examples to teach their classmates, to teach their peers what they know. Kids teaching kids works. And when kids use technology, not just to simply consume a video, a digital video, some kind of academy video online. Have kids create their own academies.
Yeah.
Have your school create your own academies of student-generated videos. Kids teaching kids is one of the most powerful ways we can use different technology tools. And all those tools that I mentioned, the Google Suite, open-ended productivity tools, interactive whiteboard software. Promethean has probably the best interactive whiteboard software that I've seen, and it's really open-ended productivity. Microsoft has OneNote, really powerful multimedia tools. Have kids use those tools to teach each other what they know.
I love it.
And you'll see an explosion in your classroom.
So the reason they're writing the book in that way is showing these things.
Yeah.
And how many people are out there, Dr. Sonny, telling what you're saying? They use technology and talk about the same old, same old. You're bringing up, and I think I'm on the right track. You want real world, authentic learning that they can utilize when they get the they go on to their careers.
Yeah, exactly. And the strategies in the transformational domain have an effect size of 1.6. Which is equivalent to quadrupling student achievement.
Oh my gosh!
Now I'm actually undershooting it. I'm daring people. I dare everybody listening to this radio station to take the T3 challenge and double student achievement because it's within our grasp. And my findings and my research methods on the T3 framework, on that doubling student achievement, actually, you know, effect size 1.6 is quadrupling. They were just peer reviewed and inducted into the University of Oxford's Research Encyclopedia for Education.
Wow.
Which is really...
How many school districts are doing this right now? How many people are doing this right now, school districts? Yeah.
There's about 36 school districts and schools all around the country, in fact, all around the world, that have picked up on the T3 framework as the method to enhance their instructional strategy, the instructional model, and their learning model in school. And it's growing. Like every day I hear from more people that are learning about my book and learning about the research. The induction into Oxford has been just a humbling and deeply rewarding experience because it means that my findings were really kind of vetted by the pinnacle research institution in the world. And so more and more people are taking the T3 challenge and learning how to unleash students' authentic passion and purpose for learning. And that's, you know, if you give a kid an opportunity to make the world a better place by teaching someone or by solving a wicked problem or learning how to, you know, create an app that solves a problem, that's transcendent.
Yes, it's truly.
That's the kind of thing that transcends the limitations.
See, but that's what made me excited as a teacher. Duquesne University, where I got my master's degree, really taught me what you're talking about, Dr. Sonny. But we went through that shift in that time in 20 years after September 11th and all the different things. I went to school, got my master's degree, went on to teach, and we just went into this common first No Child Behind and Common Core, and we forgot about all this. We forgot that the way we're going to get student achievement is by giving ownership of the kids' learning, doing specific things, developing and mastering. But we don't have teachers that can even literally teach a lesson anymore. And this is where we need the adoption of what you're doing. And I think that the way that makes it unique is involving technology, right? Because we've had a lot of these techniques that you're talking about. They're in books all over the place, right? Mm-hmm. But not involving the technology, right? From what your research has shown?
That's exactly right. In fact, I can in my book, I have a lot of musical metaphors because I'm a rock musician. As I told you, I learned how to play a long time ago, and I've been still using Eddie Van Halen's framework to think about my musicianship. And
right,
I want teachers
to
do the same thing. Use the T3 framework to think about your instructional artistry and science and really shift your classroom so that teachers don't have to work so hard. If at the end of the day, teachers go home more exhausted than their kids,
not
doing it right. The kids should be far more exhausted. And raise the conversation in your classroom. Change it from a monologue to dialogue. That's really what it comes down to. Change the conversation that kids are involved in teaching each other and discussing their understanding, playing with the learning, playing with their understanding, developing models, sharing.
How can we get the people that are so
enhances all
that? That like, for example, I'm just going to talk about the conversations I have with my daughter. She's in a great public school, but she's in the middle school and all they do is paper pencil. Or, you know, and then have homework where it's constant.
Yeah.
There's not that interaction. How can we get these teachers to buy into it? How many of your 36 schools around the globe have the kind of handcuffing that we're dealing with in our public education system. You have some innovative principals or school districts that say, hey, I want to do this. How can we get rid of what these teacher textbooks and these curriculums that just want to just check off the box, let's pass this goofy standardized test, instead of let's achieve our student learning so our kids can be prepared for the 21st century and on?
Well, it's a great synthesis. Neil, what you're talking about is the difference between learning for minimum proficiency or learning for mastery. We need to make a shift from a minimum proficiency compliance instructional model and an education model to an education model that's focused on mastery and giving students the opportunity.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.